What's up, everyone? Dre Payo here on behalf of HamiltonMusician.com, here with a very special guest calling in from Los Angeles. I'm here with music supervisor Dondrea of Instinct Entertainment. How's it going, Dondrea?
How it's going. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. I'm really excited to chat. I'm very familiar with a lot of your work, so I'm excited to hear some of the details and how it all came about.
Yeah, sounds good.
So first off, before we get into details about some of the projects you've worked on, can you tell me a bit about your roots? I know you spent a lot of time in Hamilton in your past. You mentioned you did the band thing, and you did your post-secondary at Fanshawe. So I'm just curious how this shaped you and the kind of steps you took in order to get yourself into the position you're in today.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'll try to do a little bit of a short form version of it. I grew up in a small town in Caledonia, Ontario, which is not a lot of people, just outside of Hamilton. And I actually went to Western University for 1 year to do like a media program so that I could apply for their popular music second year program. And after my first year there, I wasn't feeling like I was really rooted in music as much as I was hoping I would be. And the program seemed a little bit, you know, not of something I was interested in at the time. So I looked at alternate schools, which is why I ended up applying and going to the music industry arts program at Fanshawe College, which is in London. And it's a pretty extensive program. It's like 4 year program into 2 years. So there's a lot going on in terms of, you know, learning the ins and outs of production and engineering and also everything on the music business side. So I learned a lot about publishing and record labels, and that's kind of when music supervision was introduced to me as like a job. I didn't really know that it was something somebody actually did, and I was very much in love with music in TV and film. Growing up, it's very lame of me to say, but I'm happy to admit that one of my favorite shows was The O.C. when I was growing up, which was huge in terms of introducing me to new music, especially like indie artists, which I thought was really cool. But also, you know, huge artists like Modest Mouse and Pinback and all these really awesome bands. And I just thought that that was like the coolest job ever. And so I was like, how can I remotely get into this at all? You know, I'm not just a music fan. I genuinely enjoy film and TV and the aspect of putting those two things together. So I was like, I need to get some experience in this. I don't know anybody. So after my first year, I kind of applied to some music industry jobs in Toronto, and I looked at a few companies and a couple record labels and just reached out to let people know that if they ever, you know, had a position to reach out to me. And most people were like, we don't right now, but we'll get in touch. And so I just kept on it and followed up with people when the time was appropriate. And it turned out that one of the publishing companies that I had applied for had somebody that was taking like a leave of absence, and they were asking if I could, you know, come and work with them as soon as possible. And that was when I was still in my second year of school. So I had gone to my program coordinator and I said, hey, this job opportunity in Toronto has come up and I really want to take it. You know, can I come back and write my exams and just find a way to finish school but still take this job? And they were really, you know, receptive to that and let me do that. And so I didn't even have an apartment in Toronto. I just, through a friend of a friend, they let me sleep on a futon for like 3 weeks until I could find an apartment. And that's kind of how I got started in Toronto. And I worked at that publishing company for about a year and a half, learning a lot about copyright and licensing and pitching creatively to music supervisors from a publishing side. And then Michael Perlmutter, who owns Instinct Entertainment in Toronto, was looking for some help. And I kind of just merged over and started working with him. And I've been there supervising with him for about 5 years now, but Michael has been supervising for 20 now. He actually just had his 20th anniversary super recently, like last week. So yeah, it's been cool. I love working for Michael a lot, and I've just learned so much in the past 5 years, and it's been a pretty wild ride. So that's kind of the summed up version.
Well, it seems like it's been a big combination of things. As much as the education side was imperative to everything, the networking really seems to be something that was really important to kind of shifting you through everything.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, my first year in the program, the professors were like, guys, it's a like tough world out there in terms of jobs and in the music industry, and you really have to stand out, and you really have to know your stuff, and you have to hustle really hard. And so I tried to look for stuff, you know, even in my first year, just to get, you know, conversations going with people. But it's, yeah, the whole networking and putting yourself out there is super important in terms of just trying to get that one opportunity or like your foot in the door. But it's definitely possible.
And getting to work on Degrassi must have been exciting for an OC fan. As somebody who's seen every episode of the OC, I know that Degrassi is kind of seems like the Canadian OC, so you must have been really excited about that.
Yeah, you know what? It's super funny. I mean, I'm still a young supervisor. I'm still, you know, learning my craft. But when I found out that Michael worked on Degrassi and that, you know, I was eventually able to supervise it myself, I totally geeked out because, you know, when The Next Generation was out on television and Drake was a part of Degrassi, it was another huge show for me. Like, I watched it all the time. So being able to be, like, weirdly part of that crew was very surreal to me in many ways. And I tell the executive producers this all the time, where I, like, genuinely was such a fan of that show, and I'm so excited that I get to be part of that whole Degrassi family, because everyone on that crew is just so awesome. And, yeah, it's a pretty surreal thing, for sure.
Can you kind of walk us through exactly your role in the industry and kind of song syncs in general for people who are a little bit unfamiliar with them? Like, I'm sure every day ranges, but kind of give us a little taste of what it's about.
Yeah, for sure. So supervision is, I mean, it's pretty different in terms of what projects you're working on. For Instinct, we mostly do television, and we're doing a lot more film and documentaries as of lately. But you can there's also the advertising world in supervision. So kind of the daily tasks in terms of what we do at Instinct, in terms of TV series more specifically, is that we work directly with directors and showrunners and, you know, producers and even composers in terms of pretty much handling anything that has to do with music to picture in the show. So that, you know, goes from anywhere to a song that you hear playing as a feature to a song that you hear in the background to, like I said, working with the composer to anyone like singing something or making reference to music or melodies or anything like that. It's all stuff that we have to like clear and pitch and basically have to clear two sides of a song. We have to clear a master, which is someone who actually record or owns the physical like recording of the song. And then we also have to clear the publishing, who is usually obviously the songwriters, or if there's, you know, a publishing company, then we have to go through them. But we always have to clear two sides to a song in that case. So we're kind of, you know, reading scripts in advance, seeing where songs could go, or if there are songs referenced in a script. And then we kind of have to start the clearing process. And on top of that, we have to stay within usually a budget, which we know ahead of time, or at least we should know ahead of time. And then we do licenses, and we do all of it. A lot of people in the States, supervisors, tend to stick to mostly creative, and they have clearance people who actually do paperwork and whatnot. But in Canada, we, at least at Instinct, we do everything from finding the songs and adjusting music to doing the licensing and the paperwork. But at the end of the day, our job is to creatively find what the director's vision or producer's vision is for a project. So we just help facilitate that.
What exactly, like, how exactly do you go about choosing specific songs? I can imagine that you get thousands of different pitches and different songs in your inbox, and how do you actually decide, like, this is the perfect song? Is there a criteria, or is it kind of just on feeling? Or
I mean, there's so many things to take into consideration. Like, obviously the feeling of a song and the vibe of the song is really important, but at the same time, like, lyric content to a story is also, you know, just as important. Some would argue that it's more important, and others would say that it's, you know, a little less. It depends on who you're talking to. But, you know, the melodies and the feeling of a song, and then also the lyric content. So for me, in terms of working on Degrassi, we use a lot of, like, you know, indie artists from Canada and Toronto and around the world, really. But, you know, a lot of pop music and indie rock and singer-songwriter and anything that's, you know, emotionally heart-tugging. So if, you know, someone's making reference to a certain artist, or they sound like somebody, or, you know, I come through, or the pitches come through, and I listen and I feel like they are appropriate, I kind of organize my iTunes and have that all set aside. But it totally depends. Like, I also search for music myself. I have places that I go to look for new music when I have the time. And we also have really good relationships with licensing people who pitch us stuff pretty regularly. And we kind of know their catalogs enough to say, oh, I need a song like this. I know exactly where I can go to find it. And, you know, we sometimes send out requests to people where we're like, oh, we're in a pickle and we need a song like this. Do you have anything that sounds like it? And then, you know, people will send us specific searches or, like, pitches for music needs that we have, which is pretty cool. So it kind of depends. It's a little bit all over the place. I definitely don't get to everything, unfortunately. There's always, like you said, a lot of things coming through, so it's hard to listen to absolutely everything, but we try our best.
So I guess there's not really, I mean, with commercial radio, it seems there's more like, hey, this, if the chorus doesn't kick in by this point, and if it doesn't have this kind of tempo, then I feel like more with your realm, it's a little bit more about content and lyrical and feeling more than a strict guideline, would you say? Basically, I'm just looking for advice for songwriters when looking to get into syncs and that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that I always talk about, and a lot of my supervision friends and I have had these kind of conversations at panels and things like that, it's just that, you know, it's really difficult to tell a songwriter how to write for sync. Like, it's because it's really easy to tell when a song is not genuine. And I feel like, you know, if you want to strictly write for sync, then, you know, you're just a songwriter at that point. Like, you creatively have to wear a lot of hats in terms of understanding different feelings and emotions and storytelling and doing it in a broad enough way where, you know, there's not, like, names of people or places in your songs, because that makes it harder for people to place. Like, the more broad and generic it is, the easier it might be in terms of, like, pitching to our editors. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's important for artists to stay true to, like, their art and what they're doing. So I feel like when artists are more genuine to what they want to write about, that tends to be, you know, the stuff that we end up licensing, because it's natural, and it doesn't feel like it's forced to be written for a specific show or something like that. However, there's obviously been times where people are like, I'm a huge fan of this show, and, you know, I wrote this song, and, you know, it's been good, and I've definitely pitched songs in that sense. But I think lyric content is really important, and just learning how to, you know, continuously write new melodies and, like, just keep writing as a songwriter. I don't like to tell bands how to write for sync.
I think what to sum up everything you're saying is basically write a great song and keep it real. And as long as you kind of staying true to yourself, you'll kind of
yeah,
stumble eventually
kind
of thing.
Yeah, stay true to your art. I don't think that you should change that because you are trying to get things. I just feel that, you know, it's not as genuine when you hear stuff that's made for something specific. However, I mean, there's like producers and, you know, songwriting teams who work with like really cool pitching libraries who record stuff because they're just, that's what they want to do. They want to write for sync. And, you know, in that situation, it's awesome because they, like I said, they can put on many different hats and be like, okay, we have to write a really sad song today. Like, what are we going to write about? How are we going to come up with the right emotion? And how are we going to tell this story properly? And like, I think it's cool. There's people who do it really, really well. But as an artist and like a musician coming from like a band or a singer songwriter, it's like, I don't think if sync is not your priority in terms of songwriting, then I think you just need to write what's important to you. And if it's really good, the right people are going to find it. Like if it's really good music and it's genuine and it's sync worthy in terms of, you know, what's popular on shows today, then the right people will find it. I mean, it happens all the time for me where I reach out to songwriters and I'm like, hey, I found this on SoundCloud, or hey, I found you on Spotify and I love this song and these are the shows I work on. Are you comfortable with me pitching it? I don't get to do that as often as I would like, but it definitely happens.
Now, you're listening to a lot of music, but when you get some downtime or get some free time, what exactly are you listening to in your headphones? Besides silence, because I'm sure you're listening to so much music, it's probably nice to take a break once in a while.
No, you know what? It's funny. Sometimes there's definitely the odd time where you're just like, I need to not listen to anything. I just need to be out in nature and just turn off and unplug. But at the same time, I feel weird sometimes when there's not music playing all the time. Right now, to be totally honest with you, there's this guy from Toronto who now lives out in LA here, and his name is JP Saxe, Saxe, and he's incredible. Like, I'm so excited for his music to come out. It's coming out super soon. But he has a whole team that's like developing him as an artist now, because he's actually a songwriter and has written some pretty decent hits, and now he wants to explore, you know, being a songwriter himself. And so I've just been listening to his new EP that's about to come out like nonstop. I think it's coming out super soon, but I've been really in love with his music. I don't know, there's so much. I mean, I genuinely love like pop punk music, because if I'm not working, I'm listening to like Paramore a lot. That's like my favorite band of all time. I don't know, there's a lot of interesting things. I also really like the pop world, like this band I'm listening to called China, another one called Dallas Alps, little gems that are probably not a ton of people know about, but I don't know, there's a lot of exciting things going on. Toronto also has a wicked music scene. I don't know if, I mean, Hamilton does too. I love the Hammer with all my heart. I played with The Reason all the time, and I miss them playing shows. I wish they played more. But yeah, I don't know, the Canadian music scene is really buzzing right now. I'm obsessed with my girl, Stacey. She has a new EP that's come out called First Move. It's so, so good. It's coming out soon. She just released a single. And then another girl I'm listening to called Ralph. She's awesome. The girls are killing it right now.
Lastly, before we go, my favorite question to ask everyone is what their version of success is, and is there any specific feeling or specific thing they need to acquire before they call themselves a successful person, or is it something you're still searching for? I'm curious what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, I mean, success, it's like, it means something different to everybody, like you and I kind of were chatting about earlier. It's one of those things where personally, I feel like if you're happy with your life and where your priorities lie, I think to me, that's like the most successful you can ever be. I think that in the music supervision world, it's a pretty demanding job. You have to be kind of on call for whenever your clients need you. And sometimes it's very stressful and you need to get, approvals really quickly. And there's a lot of tight deadlines. And, working in and around that is crazy enough on top of, balancing out things in your life. But I think the most important thing you could ever do in terms of, like, success is just being happy with where you are in your life and what you're doing. And, and keep hustling doing that. Because it's so easy now to, like, compare yourself to other people and, other artists or other, for me, other supervisors or whatever. And it's just, I try to tell myself not to do those things and to just, like, work hard myself. And at the end of the day, if I'm happy with that, then to me, that is success. I don't think it's in the, a number of credits or, how many shows you've played or how many hits you've written. It's just like, if you're happy with what you're writing and it means something to you and what you're doing is coming from your heart and you're passionate about it, like, that's what I think is like a showing of success.
Definitely. Yeah. I think the journey, like you were basically saying, was enjoying the journey, enjoying where you're at, because, I mean, chasing numbers and stuff in that realm is just, you're never going to win it. It's always, numbers are infinite kind of thing. And you really have to enjoy what you're doing.
Yeah, totally. And that's exhausting, like, doing that, trying to keep up in that sense. It's like, I think it's just so important to, like, know what makes you happy as a person and, like, doing that no matter what. So if that means, like, you would rather work a coffee shop job so you could focus songwriting day in and day out and performing at night, then hell yeah, that's successful. Like, if that's what makes you happy is, like, doing that, then there's no shame in that. And that's something I find is that's really weird in society nowadays, where it's like, if someone was to leave a job or, not follow suit like everybody else or go to college, like if people don't do certain things and follow certain steps, I feel like society is almost shameful about those things. But it's just like, we don't live in a world where there are guidelines to tell us how our happiness and our success is supposed to unfold. And so I just think that, egos aside, as long as, you're happy at the end of the day, that's just really all that matters.
Yeah, I think that I always found it so weird when people are like, wow, like, you're really pursuing your dream. And it's like, in my head, I'm like, I'm just trying to do something that makes me happy. It's so weird that everyone else, it's not like a mainstream thing to kind of just pursue happiness over numbers and things that people tell you you're supposed to do. So I definitely connect with those thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's where I lie. I care about the people in my life and I care about how happy I am and, what I do day in and day out. And I'm very much a person where I will change those things if I feel like I'm not. And, like you said, that's when, you're following the things that make you happy and they're naturally like doing well and they're naturally, people are receptive to that. And that's success right there. You figured it out.
Well,
you know what I'm talking about?
Completely. Well, honestly, Dondrea, thank you so much for your time. We went a little bit longer than we had initially planned, but I really appreciate everything you had to say and just taking the time to speak with me. It was great.
No problem. I'm honestly honored that you asked. So thank you.